Our speaker this morning is Matt Williams. Matt is the founding pastor and directional leader of Grace Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Do we have any Greenville people here this morning? All right, a few of you from Greenville? None? Some? He earned his BA from Clemson University and our THM in 1995. Upon graduation, Matt and his wife Vicki felt deeply moved by God to plant a church in their home state of South Carolina, where they saw the need for a biblically based church in the city of Greenville. The church's mission is to equip believers to become mature followers of Jesus Christ who are able to impact their communities for the kingdom. God has blessed Grace Church and its biblical mission, and currently Grace is a multi-site church with 6 different campuses located around the Greenville area. Just this month, Outreach Magazine cited Grace as one of America's fastest growing churches. Out of the 100 fastest growing churches, it was number 13. Did you know? Maybe this is news to Matt. You weren't aware of it. I'll give you a copy later on. 13th fastest growing church in America, in all of America. Matt's also an author, having written his first book, Eden Derailed, in 2011. He and his wife, Vicki, have been married for 24 years and stay busy raising their 5 children. Vicki's here this morning. Vicki, would you stand up? Let's give Matt a warm Dallas welcome.
All right, good to be here. I tell you, I left almost 20 years ago, and Chaplain Brian was blowing that trumpet. I come back 20 years later, and he looks basically the same, hadn't aged a bit, but the trumpet's gotten way older than what I remembered. You know, when I was a student here, I thought, I didn't know exactly what was in store for me, and so I just would come to chapel and think that's something I would never do, because in the other chapel, the professors all sat on the sides of you. And I always thought, I don't know how you deal with that. I wasn't really a great student. When I was here, a couple of my professors are sitting over here. They're not going to remember me. But I was just wanted to say, if they were here, how grateful I am that they didn't fail me, flunk me out, other than Dan Wallace, other than him. Our relationship is still yet to recover. But I hear he's on sabbatical, so I thought I'd talk about him. You know, when I graduated and we moved from here to South Carolina, it was a unique season for us. I graduated Clemson. I got married after my junior year. When we graduated Clemson, we came here straight out of college. I was 22 years old. Started Dallas Seminary. When I enrolled here, I had classes in here. Even my first semester, I mean, I was terrified. I was unclear about where all this was going, what all this meant. I was not thinking about church or pastoral ministry. That was not where my heart was. I didn't know where my heart was. And I would get out of class. I had Ramesh Richard upstairs, I think, or maybe it was in this room, and on Tuesday nights. It was one of my first classes. And it was like a 9-hour class, and so he'd give a break in the middle. So I would leave and go get, he's not here, right? You're good. So I'd go get a Coke, and I would stand between these two buildings, this building and where the back of the chapel is, and I would look at the skyscrapers as the sun was setting behind them. And I would, every night, every Tuesday night, I would think, God, I don't know what any of this means. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how much money it takes to build a skyscraper. I can't afford to eat next week. I had all these big questions. I didn't know what I was doing. I could not make sense of the world I was living in. It was a confusing time. And as we were members at Denton Bible Church, Tom Nelson was part of the reason that I came here. We would go to church, and my wife has always been the better thinker. I'm the activator. She's the good thinker. And so we would drive back and forth a long ways from North Dallas to Denton, Texas. And she would say, you know, we go to a great church. I'd be like, we do go to a great church. It's like she's leading a fourth grader, right? Over the next few weeks, it's like, You know, we don't have churches like this where we come from. We have lots of churches and church buildings, and we have a religious tradition, but we don't have great churches that teach the Bible. We don't have churches like this. I'm like, that is right. We do not have churches like this where we come from. We have a great church, and we don't have great churches back there. And we're drinking it up, and we're hearing the Bible, and we're going to seminary. I'm going to church at Denton. I'm learning. I corner their staff, ask them questions. I'm so curious. Don't know where anything's going. And then the conversation with Vicky continues. We don't have great churches, and we go to a great church, and someone should plant a church like this in South Carolina. So for people that are like us, that didn't have great churches growing up and were fed only through parachurch ministries, and local church was not a high value for us, and someone, I was like, yes, someone should do that. And so she just keeps working that until I get, till it starts to come around, right? It starts to come around. And, you know, and her argument was, you know, you're a starter. Even as a young age, I grew up in an entrepreneurial household, so I was a starter. And so I met with some professors here. I met with Aubrey. I met with a handful of guys that I was in school with. And we began talking about what it would be like to plant a church. And just what it was that mission statement and values and what does that mean? And what's her philosophy of ministry, whatever that is. And we spent a couple years talking about that. And we were going to Atlanta, is what I thought. I wanted a bigger city in the South. I went to Colorado for a week and all they did was make fun of how I talked. I was like, well, that's not going to work. So go to a southern city and 10 months or so, 8 months before we graduated, I was meeting with Tom Nelson for breakfast. And I said, how would you pick a city to plant a church in? He named a couple things, but the third thing was what caught me. He said, you want to plant a church in a city with people that you care about so that in 10 years, when it fails, you still feel good about what you did because you care about those people. And I thought, well, I don't care about anybody in Atlanta. I just don't. I mean, I'm going to work on my sensitivity, right? But I was gaining clarity. We had friends that lived in Greenville because they graduated from Clemson, and they would call and say, we can't find a church, and we don't know what we're looking for. And so even though that was my wife's hometown, it was growing and changing, and there were people there. And so we thought, well, we're gonna give this a shot. And folks like Wendell and Martha Johnston, he was executive VP here during that time, were a great support to us, helped add clarity to us. Dr. Johnston would walk with me in the mornings and tell me things that I didn't know, and spent time with Martha, and it was real helpful to us, and they gave great support. And though it was, my life was like Luke when he opens his gospel, he says, it just seemed right that we would go do these things. So I didn't have this mountaintop. God told me on Sinai to go do this. But whenever we would take a step in a direction that felt like the right thing, God would confirm it on the backside. So that was the faith journey. We felt God was in it. It just wasn't near as much information on the front end as what I was hoping for, what I wanted. But there was lots of confirmation on the back end. I flew out in February of my last year to go meet with a group of folks in a restaurant. I'd sent out a flyer to all our friends. Hey, we're thinking about planting a church. About 35 people came to this meeting. It was great. There were lots of energy. A few months later, I graduated. We moved to Greenville. We showed up. We said, hey, here we are, and we're going to start with what we talked about in February, and almost none of those people came. We met in the home of a family that I said, hey, would you help us do this? And they said yes, and then there was one other couple. So there was Vicky and me, two other couples, and then my sister-in-law, who I made come take care of kids. So there were seven adults. 2 weeks after that launch of our church of seven adults, the family, they were originally from Texas, invited us to dinner. I did not know at that time that when someone invites you to dinner, it's 50-50. This is a good thing or a bad thing. I just thought it was a good thing. So we go to dinner and they say, hey, we've been transferred with our job back to Texas. So half the congregation, gone, 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks. I'm giving it my best shot, but I'm growing this thing into the ground. We met in a home, we met in a restaurant, we met in a YMCA, we met in a high school, back into a YMCA, and then in the fall of 99, after Thanksgiving, we were given 5 acres and a building on the east side of Greenville, which means nothing to you. It didn't mean anything to me either. It was the most prosperous, developing side of Greenville. The property is worth about $1 million at that time. It's worth well over that now. And so we had been setting up and tearing down every week for 4.5 years, and then we were given this property, and they finally gave us a home. But the original idea was that we wanted to go to the South, and we wanted to plant a church where we taught the Bible, where we taught through books of the Bible. I mean, literally, I would have people come up to me afterwards and say, I'm not tracking with what we're doing. And I would say, well, we just taught the first six verses of Ephesians 1. And next week, we'll pick up in verse 7. And we're going to work all, they're like, through the book? Is that what we're doing? And so it's a hostile kind of environment. And I had been here where that's just normal. That's what people do. They teach books of the Bible. You teach topical stuff too, but you know, teaching through the Bible is what people here do. And there, it was met with some resistance. We wanted to teach, oddly enough, we wanted to teach the Bible. We wanted to put people in groups where life change could happen in community. And we wanted to worship with an authentic expression around music and lyrics that we felt was reflective of what we cared about. So as our church grew, and I just give you that as kind of the beginning, okay? I went through, as our church began to grow with 200, 300 people, I entered into a crisis of having to move from planter to pastor. The original idea of I'm going to go start something and then turn it over to people, it was never stable enough to give to anybody. So I felt bad. I was like, I wouldn't give this to my enemy. I don't know. Why would you do that? So I had to stay in the game and be a part. And in that process, God was able to reach me and show me that there is pastoring work to do. This is about more than just starting. Our church never did explode in growth. It's just been incremental growth for 19 years. So now there, and I don't want to discredit myself when I say this, because when you are trying to communicate with church planters, we think small, and you always have to think small. It's really important. But there are six, soon to be seven campuses, and there are over 5,000 people there, all right, that we are reaching on a weekly basis on multiple campuses. And I'm most proud of some of the work that we do around in Greenville, around the upstate with fostering and adoption, and some of the partnerships that we have in Nicaragua and in Kenya, and Ron Blue helped me think through some of this. Papua New Guinea, Germany, hopefully soon to be Turkey. God has opened lots of doors for us. But I tell you all that just to give our context, and it supports the argument of 2 Corinthians 4 when Paul says we're like these vessels of clay. And the reason that we're like the vessels of clay, God could make something stronger. He chose not to. He chose to not use something stronger so that his power would be displayed, so that you know that it wouldn't be someone like me, no matter how nice a shirt I put on. You don't need to think this has anything to do with me. He cleans up well. Maybe he speaks well, maybe he doesn't. That, oh, look, they're talented people. Look what they did. This is not what happened in Greenville. This is something that God was doing. And we got swept up in it and got to be a part of it. Now, there are painful days when it feels like you're doing it alone. And you're like, I wish God would be involved, but he is, right? It's just how you feel. I came to say really one thing was that, give you that context and say, church planting's a good thing. And it is connected to everything else that we're doing. So not all of us will go plant churches. I've been called a church planter. I've tried to distinguish that and say, I am not a planter, I planted, okay? Hopefully God won't make me do that again, but I'm all about helping other people do it now, okay? But it does affect a mentality that helps all of us. And let me tell you the two reasons I think it's good. Number one is what it does to other people. Church planting, some people make the argument, Keller, a lot of guys make the argument that church planting is the number one way to reach lost people. I don't know if that's true. I don't have an interest in arguing for that. I just know that it's a very effective way of reaching people. And I can explain that in some practical terms. I think some of that's mystical. I don't have the answers to all of that. I just know when a guy comes to you after a sermon, you've been doing this for 8 months of preaching and you're learning, and a guy comes to you and goes, hey, I just need you to know I'm not a Christian and I don't know about church or churches that meet in hotels like this one. And I don't know anything about the Bible, but I know that you seem to be pretty into what you're doing. And I just want to give you a hint. If you want people to convert to what you're doing, stop telling them that God is their father. Because I hate my father and it turns me off when you say that. He goes, you're not going to be able to reach a bunch of young people when you tell them that God's their father. Well, that was the first discussion for Roger over the next 18 months before he comes to faith. Because he got to get over a big father wound before his heavenly father can make any sense to him. You go, well, that can happen in any ministry. It can, but it is the normal daily stuff of church planting. I don't know why. I don't know why people feel the freedom to come and engage on that level. So it's a great way to reach people. It is a great maturing mechanism for believers. Because when you break things into smaller pieces, people who would come spectate, there's no room for spectators in a church plant. It is a place to come and serve and come and work. And people have to not just serve. There's some people who would normally just kind of serve who have to take on some leadership responsibilities. And that becomes part of their spiritual journey, is that they are now serving when they would not in a different context. They are now leading where they would not in a different context. And that becomes the tool and the mechanism by which God helps them grow. It stretches their faith. And so, and we see that. And for us, that's become a church planting issue, but it's also become a multi-site issue, is that when we take people from our original campus and let them go to church in their community, instead of driving 20 minutes from their community to our original campus, and we say, we're going to launch a campus in your community, this starts with 50 people, 70 people, and now they may have been spectating, now they are actually serving, because they have to, or else it won't survive. And they feel the need for the people that they're at the game with on Friday night, the basketball game, now they get to invite those people to their church that may meet in that same gym, or may meet in that same school, or may meet in just right down the road. So now they're doing ministry in a smaller context where they have to own it. Which does bring me to kind of a little bit of the point that I'm here and a couple guys from our church, is that we have the opportunity for guys and gals to come and be a part of what we're doing. We have a residency program, an internship program. And so for some of you, you love to teach. And so you're going to be a teacher. So, and you like to lead. So maybe church planting's for you, maybe pastoring's for you. But there's a bunch of guys on this campus that are leaders who don't want to teach very much. They like to communicate a little bit. They want to teach. You got 3 to 5 good sermons in you a year, but you are a leader dude. That is leading a multi-site campus. You don't have to carry the weight on all the teaching, and you get to lead and be a spiritual leader and a pastor for folks. And so if that interests you at all, we would love to discuss that with you, because it's a new role that none of us foresaw, and now we have lots of opportunities for folks to lead in that way. The second one is not just what it does for other people, it's what it does to you. And this is really what I came to say. And I hope it's as clear for when I say it as it is in my mind, but it's a lot to experience and to have to say. All ministry does this, but church planting or serving in a smaller context does this in spades. It exposes you. It pulls away some of the covering that we hide behind and exposes us for the frail, fragile spiritual leaders that we are. Church planting for me put me in a place that I could not avoid. For all the things that I could hide from in larger contexts and in different situations, when people came to me and said, what does our church think about debt? Well, I couldn't say, well, the elders say, the board of directors say. I had to go, oh, here's what we think. Here's what we say. And so I had to say something. Or when the couple comes to me and says, hey, I know we had some conflict a couple weeks ago, but we feel like you are avoiding us. And I had to go. I had to lie and say, oh, no, I'm not avoiding you. Everything's great. Or I had to go, yeah, because I'm really scared of you. And I feel that probably the whole thing was my fault anyway. So, yeah, I am actually hiding from you. I didn't say it quite like that. And let me nuance this and be very careful, because it's going to sound in a minute like I'm saying the opposite. So you got to hang on to the nuance of it. We're taught that we're doing ministry for the king, and that is true. And we're doing ministry for other people, and that is true. And that is for real. And I'm going to hold that up again in a second. But here's the other part of it, is that a lot of what we are doing is very much about us. Is that God has swept us into his kingdom to do work inside of us. So I am serving him, and I am helping these people. But part of what is happening in this moment is actually about what he is doing inside of me. It is not just the work that I'm doing for other people, the work that I've been called to do for other people. He is using that to shape me. And so your work in the ministry, and I'm using the word work intentionally, your work in the ministry serving other people is a partly about the work that God wants to do for you. My last year here was Swindoll's first year. And when he came in, he was just a different personality. It's a big personality, lots of words. Gregarious, and so you know, lots of studious people here. He brought a whole different feeling. But one of the things that he said a couple times in that year of transition, he says, I come to you from the local church with the smell of sheep on my hands. And that, you know, and I thought, that's so cool how he says things. But then I was like, but I don't know what that means. And I was like, I asked him one day, because my wife worked in the president's office, and he came in one day. I was like, hey, smell the sheep on the hands thing. That's so cool. And I know that sheep stink. I've never been around one, but I hear they stink. And I just wondered, what does that mean? He said, well, people's lives are messy. And when you get involved with it, it makes your life messy. He goes, and then you don't always handle it well. Now, this was the brilliant part. He goes, you don't always handle it well. So it's not just their mess that you have on you. It's your mess that you have on you. I'm going to tell you something. That, Jack, is true. Like, you do not know what you are doing. When you get out, you do not know how to preach. You don't know how to counsel. You don't know how to lead. You don't have to be strategic. We don't have to do any of that. We are all a work in progress. All right? And they are messing up. Our sheep are messing up. But we are too. And we're not handling it all right. And it's very complicated. And so this is what I want to say. This is a challenging piece. We recruit folks and we're recruiting and training and interviewing all the time from this school and other schools and different places from the north, the south, east, west, the whole deal. We just want to see where is God working? Who would he bring to us to be a part of what we're doing? And here's what, I'm just going to be honest. Here's what's disturbing is the level of arrogance and the lack of self-awareness that we have as a Christian culture of young leaders. It is arrogance and a lack of self-awareness about who we are, what we can do, what we cannot do. There's an intense level of posturing. It is not about non-denominational or Baptist or Presbyterian. It is the whole gamut of posturing that comes from people like us who are supposed to be the humble ones. I had a guy in our church said, I'd like you to come speak to some young businessmen, the round table deal, about 10 of them. Half are Christians, half are non-Christians. I just like you to sit around the table and just let them ask questions about leadership. I was like, you do know I'm pastor, right? He goes, yeah. He said, but there's some things that we do that might be helpful, and I just would love for them to be able to interact with some of this. He goes, you don't have to get anybody saved today. Just talk, right? Just answer questions. So one of the guys halfway through, he says, hey, I'm not a Christian. He goes, I mean, I'm thinking about it, but I'm not a Christian. I visited your church, but church wigs me out. But I got a question. And so he asked me a question about leadership. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I don't know. I said, no one's ever asked me that question before. I said, in 36 hours, I'm going to have some kind of answer for you. He goes, okay, because I know you have this spiritual thing and there's these practical things and I'm wondering how that works for you. And does that even work for me? And here's what I realized after 2 hours of answering questions, half of which were from non-Christians. And then we help with some church planting and we help with pastors and we help recruit and train young folks out of Bible colleges and seminaries. Here's what I'm telling you. I am seeing more honest, authentic humility from non-Christian businessmen and women than I am seeing in my own Christian leadership culture. I'm not putting that on you. I'm saying I'm here. I was here. I did all this. I'm in it. And if the professors were all sitting around me, I'd say they're in it too. We all got to own that. I'm just saying, right, we see non-Christians authentically asking questions, seeking truth, humbling themselves so they can be good at something that we would say is probably not even that important compared to what we're trying to be good at that we think is really important. And there's some humility we got to work on. The other thing is the motive piece. Is that, who knows your motives? We're working on all that. And it's a work in progress. And you're much clearer way down the road when you look back at yourself. But let's just at least attempt. We make our Christian leadership culture, young men, young women, we make Abraham Maslow look brilliant. That we are a group of people who are trying to self-actualize and find fulfillment by leveraging our ministry gifts and opportunities in the church or in the ministries we serve. That this church or this ministry is a place where I find fulfillment. Where I am using a group of people to put myself on display so you can cheer for me. So this is my ministry. These are my gifts, my abilities. You need to watch me. You need to affirm me for what I can do. I'm just saying, we are replete with this. Not just Dallas Seminary. This is our culture now, our Christian culture. And there's a part of us that has got to find some humility and say, okay, I got to rethink all how this works. In Acts 9, Jesus appears to Ananias. He goes, hey, there's a guy named Saul praying. He's praying. He goes, I want you to go meet with him. He's blind. I want you to heal him. Ananias says, I mean, he kills people, so that's not really a good idea. Jesus says, he's expecting you. He's like, that's what I'm worried about. He says, but just go do it. So he goes and he says, and before he walks out the door, Jesus says, I must show him how he will suffer for me. Not to pay me back for what he's done, not to pay for his sin or to earn his right in the kingdom or anything like that. He goes, but that's what this is. And then towards the end of Paul's life in 2 Timothy 4:6, he says, my life being poured out like a drink offering. It's being poured out. Here's the word one of our other teaching pastors uses all the time. He says, your life, my life, is a consumable. It is meant to be consumed by the king in his kingdom, in his service. Not for me to put my gifts on display for you to receive affirmation and validation from you. I'm a consumable to be poured out like a drink offering. And the Messiah that we say we serve is the epitome of this idea of one who comes from greatness and is poured out for us. So it's a simple idea, but it is elusive to us. And the option is, if we do not open ourselves to the scrutiny and the humility that needs to come from people who say, I am not all right, I do not have all the answers, my character is not fully developed, I need to be challenged, I need to be corrected, I need this person to speak truth into me, I need to be under authority, I need these things in my life. Otherwise, I get older and I become less powerful and less relevant. See, when we're young, the illusion of power comes through energy. It's just energy. And when the energy goes away, then you get exposed for the fraud that you are. As we get older, we should become more relevant and more powerful because of the shaping character that has been built into us over decades of God doing work through us, but doing work in us. Makes us more powerful, not less powerful. And the old part is falling away, and the inner side is getting renewed day by day. That's the idea. I look at this room, let me just tell you, I can be hard, and I worked on not being hard. Because in my congregation, they're used to all that. We can be mean. I can't be mean here. So, but I'm not discouraged because I'm a prototype, right? I mean, you don't know where I come from. I come from a little community called Socastee. My mailing address was Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's a little resort area where if you want to do bad stuff, get in trouble, it's a great place to go. But I lived outside of that in a little farming community. I mean, I come from nowhere. I come from nowhere. And so as I look at this dream, I go, I'm not discouraged about this idea. It's just a reality. We got to rebuke and we got to correct and we got to be trained in righteousness. We got to do all that. But I look at this, I'm hopeful because it is not about your talent and how smart you are. It is about a great God that we serve that is going to do work through you and going to do work in you for a long, long time. And so my questions are, before I pray, just to be thinking about, is that when you dream, when you're dreaming about the future and what you're doing and what you want to do, are you dreaming about the part where you're pouring out, you're serving? Or are you dreaming about the applause and the affirmation you get from that serving? Because I know what I was dreaming about. And I was dreaming about the affirmation that might come from doing great things. So what are we dreaming about? And then at some point in the future, when some people come to you, a person comes to you or a group of elders or your board or whoever's over you, your boss, and begin to challenge you and say, hey, here's some areas of your character. You're shaving off the truth right there. You're not handling this well. You're not being responsible with this. You're dropping some balls here. You're not being faithful in some ways. When that happens, will you see that as someone who was sent by God to show you how much you should suffer? Or will you see that as an obstacle to the agenda you have for affirmation? I mean, these are daily kinds of questions that we have to ask. Let me pray. Father, you are kind to us. We do not stumble onto any idea that produces judgment or discipline on us that has not been in effect for a long time. We don't stumble onto any truth about ourselves that catches you off guard. Everything that we would discover about ourselves that we would think would disqualify or distance us from you, you've already known about those things. So you're a safe place for us. Your goal has been restoration and repentance for all of us. And that we don't want to be a group of people who preach repentance as an event so that you go to heaven. We want to be a group of people who live a lifestyle of repentance where you are constantly speaking to us, showing us, convicting us, and we are constantly turning to you in all areas. We ask that you pour out your grace and your mercy on us. We know that we've already received it, but we ask that we would be aware of how you are moving in us and that we would not fear what you call us to, that we would be courageous and move towards the great challenges you have for us. We ask it in your name. Amen.